This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Live your best life
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Fantastic to have you with us for another episode of the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast, a special look at children's health, parenting and education on this show. As we were discussing, well, coughs and sneezes, all the germs and all the nasties doing the rounds, and that's not including COVID. So many kids are unwell right now. So we were straight on the phone to Dr. Rani, specialist paediatrician and medical director at Circle Care Clinic, to find out exactly what's going on, when it's time to go to the doctor, and she was taking your questions too. And we were turning our attention to entrepreneurship. Do you think 5 or 6 is too young to start a business? The co-founder of Kidstarter, Jazeer Jamal, certainly thinks it's not. Why he thinks starting a business can teach your kid some key lessons and telling you how to do it. And what is your parenting style? Experts have identified 4. So which one are you? Hanan from the Family Hub was on hand to talk us through them and address some of the questions. What happens if mum and dad have different styles and there's a big clash?
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are here to sort out your health and that of your little ones this afternoon. And my goodness, there is some germs around. Joining us live on the line is specialist paediatrician and medical director at Circle Care Clinic. It is Dr. Rania, and I know you're probably very busy right now, doctor. So thank you so, so much for being with us for a free clinic. What is coming through your doors?
Hi, Helen. So much is coming through the doors in the way of stomach bugs, you know, the lovely vomiting and diarrhea bugs, lots in the way of hand, foot and mouth disease, and so much in the way of RSV, that horrible virus that gives a very bad head cold and a cough that seems to go on and on and on. And interestingly, the strain of RSV going around seems to be causing lots of secondary ear infections, which aren't very nice before traveling, if anyone's traveling.
It's horrible. So, well, honestly, I really am thinking of anyone out there who's feeling rubbish or is looking after a poorly child. Our house last week was just a disaster. I got struck down with a head cold to the point where I felt so bad. People go, oh, just go and, you know, cozy up on the sofa and watch a movie. No chance. Couldn't look at screens. Terrible tension headache. All bunged up. Then my little one got it. Then we thought she had hand and foot and mouth. I was like, oh, God. And yeah, as you say, a lot of people hoping to travel. I was 100% convinced I had COVID last week. 100%. I went to bed at 8 o'clock. Woke up at 11 o'clock at night and took myself for a drive-through test. I was like, this is it. But what I wanted to ask you was, I had the Pfizer booster a week before, and I wondered if, this is purely selfish, we're going to come to the text line because we are getting questions for you, but how kind of down the line can you get side effects from having the vaccine? Is a week later completely unrealistic? Was it a head cold, do you think?
Yes, it's probably unlikely to be side effects, especially since you had a head cold. And then, as you mentioned, your little one was sick at around the same time. Mm-hmm. It's most likely a virus. And it probably was, to be honest, from your description, it probably was RSV. It's horrible. It's been the one going around the most. And there are so many studies coming out of the US and the UK mentioning how it's come back with a vengeance. It's normally a winter virus, but I think just with restrictions on all of that, it's been pushed out to now. So I think side effects from the vaccines are normally there. The ones like the viral side effects are there within the first 12 hours after a vaccine and probably last 2 to 3 days. I can't imagine people having a vaccine being well for a week and then developing a virus.
So why is there so much around right now? I know when we spoke earlier in the year, it was a case of, you know, we haven't had those flu cases coming into clinic because we have been so careful, you know, because of restrictions in place. And right now there is just a kind of an explosion of unwell children. So what's changed?
So I think what's changed is the weather doesn't help. So I think over the last month, everyone's been spending more time indoors. So it allows for more transmission of viruses. And I also think that because of the lockdowns and the restrictions and the way we were leading our lives as well, less in the way of birthday parties and gatherings and play dates and all of that, there wasn't a chance for these viruses to propagate. But we have been, you know, opening up a little bit more. So I think that's allowed children, and they've been for the major part well for the last year and a half, to suddenly their immune system is suddenly on, you know, high alert and catching everything that comes their way. So I think it's this barrage of viruses that have been held at bay because of all the restriction measures over the last year and a half. You know, one of my patients came up with something funny. Then they said, we found the cure for the common cold. It's the masks. So
it's true.
The fact that people are wearing their masks less because of the activities they're doing, mm-hmm. and a lot of them are indoors. And now with summer camps, I do think that that's probably the major reason.
You mentioned hand, foot and mouth earlier, Dr. Rania, and Sherry's been in touch saying my 8-month-old had a high temperature for a day and then broke out in spots, starting on his eczema patches. Look like red blisters. He also has them in his mouth. Will only take a few sips of milk or water, then cry. I've Googled and I'm not sure if it's chicken pox or hand, foot and mouth. How can I tell?
Chicken pox, you would have a far longer duration between the fever and the appearance of the rash, and the distribution would be quite different. I think this is typical hand, foot and mouth. Chicken pox, you don't often get the blisters inside the mouth. So I do think this is hand, foot and mouth. And it's not unheard of where patches of skin that are more sensitive, like patches of eczema, would be the bits where you begin to see the rash first. So this is typical.
I wanted to ask you, with so much going around, when is it time to go to the doctor, Dr. Rania? When is it time to, you know, dose up on your Calpol or the yummy pink, as my kids call it, and just stay at home and rest up? And when is it time to actually perhaps get, you know, expert advice and medicine?
I think if the cause of the fever or the symptoms is obvious, in that a neighbor's child had, you know, similar symptoms, or another one of your children had the similar symptoms, and it started with a runny nose or diarrhea, which are very typical viral symptoms, it does make sense to hold tight for a day or two, so that when the doctor finally sees your child, if they need to, they can tell where the disease is going. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's quite difficult for us within the first 6 to 12 hours of a fever appearing, or even the first 24 hours, to predict whether this child will be the one to get a secondary ear infection or will be the one to get, you know, and sometimes the cause is hidden. But if you are a new parent, and this is the, and many of us feel like new parents because we haven't had to deal with these things for 18 months.
Totally.
So if, you know, if you are a new parent and you're feeling nervous about managing a fever, or if you're not, you know, then you should see your doctor immediately. But waiting a day or two or three, because all viruses have a life cycle of 7 days, fevers can last 3 to 4 days. So as long as they're manageable and your child's well hydrated and seems to be okay between fever spikes, it's probably okay to wait.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are here to answer your questions this afternoon when it comes to your children's health, as we're joined live on the line by Medical Director and Specialist Paediatrician at Circle Care Clinic. It's Dr. Rania. Going to the text line, Dr. Rania, lots of snotty kids out there is the long and short of it. Paul has been in touch. 8-month-old nose is constantly running. It's been a while. No other cold symptoms. Sometimes it's not, it bubbles out of her nose. She says, sorry, TMI. I can hear the mucus on her chest while breathing and sleeping. The doctor suggested Puritan, but the box says not recommended for under one, so I'm hesitant. Is it worth trying an air purifier? Don't want to keep on giving Calpol if it's not getting better. Poor little soul. What would you say about an 8-month-old with a snotty nose? They do make a lot, don't they?
They do. I think just the point on the Calpol, I would say only to be used with a fever. So if the child doesn't have a fever, then the likelihood is that they don't have a current virus, and Calpol is unlikely to help. So many causes of a snotty nose. Anecdotally, teething can even cause it. You know, in the wake of a cold, 8-month-old can have a snotty nose for weeks. We also need to think of potentially something in the environment, like allergens. And I think that's where the question's going with respect to an air purifier. But before sort of forking out all that money on one, I would look at the environment within the cot. So if there are any stuffed toys, try and take those out when the baby's asleep, because they are dust magnets as much as we try to keep them clean. Make sure the grills in the air conditioning are kept clean and dust-free as much as possible. Vacuuming twice a week if we can. If there are fluffy carpets, try and get rid of those and have sort of short pile carpets. Make sure if the cot is near some drapes or curtains, to make sure those are vacuumed. Those are little things we tend to forget, even if we change the sheets twice a week. Mm-hmm. So getting rid of dust helps. And funnily enough, people think that opening their windows and airing their room out as a good idea.
Not in Dubai. But
the air here is not that good, exactly. So I would say keep the windows closed, keep your air conditioning on at a decent temperature, and rather than switching it on and off all the time, should hopefully help. And if it continues, then get checked before we jump down the route of allergies. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's an ongoing infection of some sort that okay. needs looking at.
Really hope that helps, Paula. No name on this one. And as I always say, if you'd rather not put your name on, that's absolutely fine. Makes no difference. Just want to make sure you get the answers that you need. But a dad's been in touch saying, just trying to work out if I need to worry and should be seeing a doctor about our son. He's 5 and 102 centimetres tall, quite noticeably the shortest in his class. He's always been small. We've seen dietitians see if it's a diet problem because he's got a dairy and nut allergy, but his diet's fine. Hormone levels were tested a few years ago, also fine. Check for celiac, came back negative. In the last year, he's only grown a centimetre, and if I'm reading the charts correctly, he's gone from 25th percentile down to 2nd. Thing is, I was a small and skinny child too, but I don't think it was this extreme. I'm 6 foot now and wife is 5'9", so I just feel he should be taller. Comes back to that question of when do you see a doctor? So a worried dad here wondering about the development of his son who's 5 and 102 centimetres. How much stock do you put in those growth charts, Dr. Anya?
I think growth charts are very important, provided they're kept properly. So the first thing I would want to do is repeat the measurements myself and wonder about the previous ones as well. And don't look at height on its own as a one growth parameter. So if his weight has also dropped like his height has, it would make sense why there's a slowing down in his gaining height. Some children do become picky eaters for some reason, start eating less, you know, they don't lose weight necessarily, but they stop gaining weight as quickly, and that can affect height. So I would say get a fresh checkup from scratch with all the previous measurements, have them be plotted on a growth chart again, look at it over the last 5 years, and then take it from there. And then we can look at if there are any nutritional issues or anything else before we start thinking of hormonal and, you know, other there's sort of more serious growth-related issues.
Okay, hope that helps put your mind at ease. A question here from D. Dr. Ron is saying, any advice for preteen skincare? And so it begins, spending all that money, or do you? When it comes to maybe not even preventing acne, because there's only so much you can do, but when is the right time to start a good skincare regimen, and what kind of products or processes should be in place?
I think it's a very good question, especially here with, you know, this is something I'm dealing with my daughter at the moment, who's almost 12. I think the tween age, you know, the 10 to 12 year old age, is probably the right time to develop good habits in face washing with a product that's probably different to their shower gel or shampoo, which is probably what they're using if they do wash their face. And I don't think we need to go down the route of hugely expensive medical products. I think they're very good over-the-counter, simple products that can be used for sensitive skin. And I think it's more the habit and the frequency that determine the results rather than the type of the product. And if it's something that looks like proper acne developing, then you would want to get the the advice of a dermatologist to make sure you're not over medicating in a way.
I think that makes sense, because it can get very complicated and very expensive very early. But as you say, there's some really nice gentle brands out there, the likes of your Cetaphil and your CeraVe, and you said simple before, but that kind of thing. We know having dermatologists on the show before.
I didn't mean the brand.
No, I know you didn't, but it does what it says on the tin. But yeah, having spoken to dermatologists for both adult and teen skin on the show before, you know, so much angst and anxiety around acne that can be treated. So if anyone's suffering out there or they're worried about their child's skin, do go and see an expert, because there is probably a lot more that can be done than you realise. And it's changed an awful lot since I was a child. None of that kind of awful spot cream that strips your skin away.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Talking children's health this afternoon, and we've stolen away specialist paediatrician and medical director at Circle Care Clinic, Dr. Rania, until 3 o'clock. She's taking your questions, your concerns on your children's health. So from, well, lots of coughs and sneezes going around, but anything that's really been on your mind, maybe you haven't had the chance to go to the doctor, or you want a second opinion, or the symptoms simply aren't adding up, get in touch. Dr. Ryan, going to the text line 4001. Hannah's been in touch saying, my four-year-old son has eczema. It's got drastically worse in the last few months. It was pretty minor before that. We're very careful, tried every cream going, but it's suddenly improved, virtually gone in the last week or two. The only change is that he hasn't had strawberries in that time. He usually has them every morning with breakfast. Could it really be strawberries all this time, or is it just coincidence? Is there a way of figuring this out for Hannah and her son?
There could be, but I think she's done the best test, which is omit the strawberries. She could try reintroducing them. That would probably make his eczema flare. But jokes aside, food doesn't directly cause eczema. But if your child has the... there'll be some foods that make it worse. So the weather over the last month or two has made cases of eczema worse for obvious reasons. It's more humid. We've been swimming more, the chlorine, etc., sweating, all of that. And there will be some foods that some children may react to in this way. So it's like, I wouldn't term this as an allergy to strawberries. Mm. It may be something that he experiences now and not in the future. So I wouldn't say strawberries are off the table, but she may find that cooked strawberries don't do this, or jam doesn't do this. But yes, she can go to an allergist and go through some skin prick testing, which may show that he flares to strawberries. But it's probably a temporary situation, and it probably is simply because he has that tendency for eczema to begin with.
Okay, enjoy it while you can. Enjoy it, Hannah. Now, straight from the show today, I'm heading off to have my PCR test. Fingers firmly crossed that me and the family are going to be able to get on a plane Tuesday morning. I haven't packed yet because I don't want to jinx anything. But I'm very aware that given my tendency to get sick whenever I go on holiday, and probably my children's as well, we're going to need to pack a first aid kit. Dr. Rania, as a doctor, as a mum, what do you pack to make sure that you're feeling confident about dealing with anything that comes your way, whether it comes to accidents or illnesses when you're travelling?
So I always pack anti-fever medicines, not just the paracetamol, so not just the pink yummy stuff like that you mentioned, but also ibuprofen. So two types of anti-fever medications. I always pack plasters or band-aids for those cuts and bruises. I always pack an antihistamine just in case there is an unlikely allergic reaction to something, or it may just be to help with itchy mosquito bites. So an oral antihistamine is always helpful. An antibiotic cream or an antiseptic cream for cuts and bruises, or even insect bites that get, scratched and that scab over. If your child tends to have bad reactions to mosquito bites, then having a steroid cream, if you've been prescribed that before, it's good to have that at hand, because that can nip that reaction in the bud if applied right as soon as you notice a bite has happened. And if your child is on regular medications, even if there's something that your child has not used for weeks and weeks and weeks, what comes to mind are the asthma inhalers. So many children, because they haven't been as sick over the last year and a half, bar the last 2 months, have probably not had to use their inhalers if they had been previously prescribed. But when you go to a new place on holiday, you don't know what triggers may face. So taking those along probably makes sense. And it all depends. I think regular medications, or if your child is likely to have motion sickness, you may have once upon a time been prescribed an anti-vomiting medication, having that at hand as well. So I think the regulars are things for fever, things for cuts and bruises, things for mosquito bites, even repellents, and then the personalized medications based on cases that are specific to your child.
All right. I know I'm going home via the pharmacy tonight. Thank you for that, Dr. Anna. Really, really useful indeed. Coming to the text line, as I said, we're still on your way from clinic until 3 o'clock. So do get in touch if you've got any questions or concerns. And we've had a number of messages along a similar vein. So I think Max probably encapsulates it well, saying 20-month-old daughter has had a persistent cough for 2 months now, keeping her awake. Doctor has suggested using a nebulizer. Do they actually work? So persistent coughs is something that's been coming in a lot on 4001. Kids, little ones and slightly older ones with a cough that just will not go away. How can you tackle it?
So A nebulizer may work well in the acute sense. So when the cough is related to a virus, so there was a fever, a runny nose, and then a cough developed. So in that first week, nebulizers can help, even if it's just using saline, which is not a true medicine per se. It can help dilute the secretions and help the cough be more effective. And then in cases where there's a slight asthma picture or a bronchiolitis picture, then there are some other medications used that help open up the airways. But with a cough that's been prolonged for 2 months, I don't necessarily agree with the use of a nebulizer unless the odd saline nebulizer seems to give some relief. I'd want to go and look for the cause of the cough. So is it that this child has allergies or has a mild form of asthma or even a mild secondary infection that's been overlooked? Now, one of the viruses I did mention earlier, the RSV virus, that notoriously can give a cough that can last 6 to 8 weeks. So it may well be that a previous virus was not diagnosed as RSV and that may be the cause of the cough. A checkup should help clear it all up, actually.
Thank you for that, Mac. I feel your pain. I really do, because there's nothing... Oh, it's upsetting to have them, you know, wake up in the night coughing, feeling like you can't give them any relief at all. But yeah, worth a trip to the doctors just to check out the root cause of that.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Delighted to be joined this afternoon by Medical Director and Specialist Paediatrician Dr. Rania from Circle Care Clinic. No name on this message, Dr. Rania, saying, which vaccinations are for 10-year-old girls? Is it too early to take the HPV vaccination? 10-year-olds, what's on their agenda?
So usually around that age, there's a booster for the tetanus, pertussis, polio vaccine. And no, it's not too early to take the HPV vaccine. That can be taken from the age of 9. Advantage of doing it some point before the age of 15 is you only need 2 doses as opposed to 3.
There you go. Super to the point. Thank you, Dr. Rania. Shams has been in touch saying, my son is 20 months old and we've just noticed that he's slightly turning one or both of his eyes inwards. He's not doing it all the time and it's mainly when he's eating. It's totally out of the blue. Have been Googling and have now scared myself with brain problems, but it does sound a bit like strabismus. I'm possibly not saying that correctly, but what is that? And Shams is saying, what should I do?
So strabismus is, no, you said it properly. Strabismus is a convergent squint where the irises and the pupils tend to sort of go inwards towards the nose. I think the likelihood is that this has been present from birth and it does often correct itself. But if they've just noticed it and he is 20 months old, it probably makes sense to check with an ophthalmologist. I would not panic or worry. And it sounds behavioral around food, maybe when he's focusing on something quite close to his face that he has to, you know, converge to focus on. But I think a check with a pediatric ophthalmologist makes sense if it's new.
Brilliant. There you go. Hope that helps, Shamsa. Coming to the Instagram DMs, homegrown littlies, as DM'd us, saying probiotics for kids, are they necessary? In which cases would you recommend them and when are they a big waste of our hard-earned dirhams, Dr. Rania?
They've become so trendy, haven't they, probiotics? I think in the wake of an antibiotic course makes the most obvious sense to me because that is where you've taken an antibiotic which has gotten rid of all the good and the bad bacteria in your body, hopefully the bad, but some of the good. So replenishing that makes sense. There are some cases whereby when a newborn or a small baby has issues with colic, where anecdotally the use of probiotics seems to help with that. And then there are some cases where older children may not follow a healthy diet full of prebiotics, which help bacteria naturally grow in our gut. Probiotics can help, even help cases of constipation. So I would say they're not for everyone. You're absolutely right. They are very expensive and often unnecessary. So if your child is growing well, going to the toilet regularly, eats, you know, the fruits and vegetables healthy, has not had a recent course of antibiotics, you do not need to take them.
Good advice indeed. We've had 2 questions about tonsils. One from Sunil saying, our son is 3.5, has snored loudly for quite some time, breathes through his mouth while asleep. He's also behind in his speech, drools a lot and doesn't sleep great, wakes up a lot and shouts in his sleep. Could these be linked to his adenoids or tonsils?
Very much so. Yes, it could be. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to jump straight for a tonsillectomy or a surgery to remove them. But I think review with this an ENT specialist does make sense. So mouth breathing means that a child is not is not breathing well through their nose, which is what they're meant to do. It can affect oxygenation, long term, which can affect quality of sleep, which can affect a whole host of things. And many of the symptoms they've described does fit that picture, basically.
Okay.
So a review with an ENT doctor makes sense.
There you go, Sunil. Hope that helps you and your boy. And Terry's been in touch saying, my 15-year-old suffers with terrible impacted tonsil stones. She's tried gargling salt water and it's impossible to remove herself. Any advice, please? Do I go to the dentist or the doctor?
An ENT doctor. So it's a fairly common complaint. They often are harmless, apart from the fact that they're annoying and will sometimes, you know, some people learn to cough them up, cough them out, and can lead to halitosis or bad breath. So it's one of those things that, especially if you're that age, you're probably looking to sort out or get rid of. An ENT specialist is who you need to see.
Dr. Rania, it has been almost an hour since I've said the word COVID. So I feel like we have to. It's my duty as a broadcaster in 2021 to bring it back to COVID-19. But treating kids with COVID, especially the Delta variant, which people are particularly concerned about right now, what do parents need to know, and any advice for anyone who's currently looking after an unwell one with COVID-19?
It remains not a big concern when a child catches COVID. So in the acute sense, COVID is arguably probably easier to deal with a child than all the other viruses you and I mentioned at the beginning of this hour. So I think it's COVID as a title is very scary. So parents need to take a step back and treat the symptoms, treat it like a virus. So if there's a fever, treat the fever. If there, if your child's not eating very well, try and keep their fluids up, monitor their urine output, make sure they're comfortable. I wouldn't do any more beyond that. COVID in its own right with children does not seem to cause any acute complications in the grand scheme, in the major parts. So I would say manage it as a cold, and you'll probably be worse off than they were if you were to catch it. Basically.
And we're seeing, so much around long COVID, 200 symptoms, so much still unknown when it comes to adults. Are you having any children presenting with long COVID? Any complaints or concerns from parents?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things we've noticed the most is a slightly weaker immune system in the wake of COVID. So in the 3 to 6 months beyond COVID, we found the children who had a very mild case of COVID would come in with repeated other viruses every 2 to 3 weeks. They were in the office with coughs, colds, maybe needed slightly more in the way of antibiotics for secondary infections. But 6 months down the line, I'm seeing them less and less. So, and I've read this in articles and reports coming from other countries as well. So the one for me, the major one, is this sort of slightly weakened immunity in the wake of COVID. Other symptoms, I've had a few, mainly the tweens or teenagers, probably having some fatigue, long-term fatigue, but in the majority of cases, if not all of them, it all wears off. It all goes away in the end. We haven't had someone who months and months down the line is still suffering, thankfully.
And lastly, Dr. Rania, with people heading off on their summer holidays, any general guidelines for making sure that, well, ideally, we don't catch COVID-19, but also some of these nasty germs and viruses that are going around. Just a quick reminder for keeping us safe over summer.
I think back to basics, the masks. So what protects you against COVID-19 thankfully protects you against all these other viruses. So it's touching of surfaces that the wet surfaces that could have been accessed by other people, sanitizing, make sure that if you're in a crowded place, don't take your mask off if you can help it. If you're outdoors in a place where the weather's nice, or if you go to a restaurant, choose to sit outdoors rather than indoors. So even if you're in a city where mask wearing isn't mandatory, if you are in a crowded place, please remember the rules we live by here, because they are actually helpful and they're very, very protective. So hopefully your return home PCRs are negative and you don't get stuck somewhere, which is my fear when we travel.
Don't. I know. My husband's like, I'm going to pack my laptop just in case.
Yeah,
well, thinking of everyone who is hopefully traveling, everyone who's staying here, I personally think it's probably the best place to be in terms of safety. Wouldn't fancy being in the UK right now, to be honest, in the next 24 hours. Dr. Rania, as ever, really appreciate your time, your no-nonsense advice, and just your breadth of knowledge is just fantastic. And you can find Dr. Rania at Circle Clinic. Wishing you a wonderful summer ahead. Thank you so, so much.
Thank you. Same to you.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It is, of course, the summer holidays, and if your kids are anything like mine, they're asking for snacks and already saying they're bored. Could they be putting their attentions and efforts into something a bit more productive. We're speaking now to the co-founder of Kidstarter, which is all about turning your child into a kidpreneur, an entrepreneur with their online community. So let's speak now to the man himself, Jazeer Jamal, joining us, serial entrepreneur, investor, startup advisor, and he is a family man as well. His son is dipping his toe into the world of business. Jazeer, thank you so much for being with us. Before we start talking about Kidstarter, can you tell us a little bit about your early entrepreneurial efforts, selling stationery, selling sandwiches? Where did it all begin for you?
Hi, Helen. Thank you very much for being for coming on the show. Appreciate
Welcome.
That. My entrepreneurship experience started as little as when I was 8 years old, while I was, selling these small little stationeries to my friends, and then all the way selling toys to gadgets to selling photos to selling sandwiches in high school, and now running different sort of companies. And I would really, we're actually making a video on how that began, and then it would be lovely to share that, and anybody watching my this interview can actually see that detail of how I did my first sale when I was 8 years old.
It's pretty extraordinary. I mean, there's lemonade stands, and then there's what we're talking about today with Kidstarter. Can you tell us about the concept and where it came from?
Well, the whole concept came from when, and it was of a conversation between me and my wife, where, my wife said, we don't have a platform for kids where, like the West, where the kids can, start something as small as selling lemonades or, selling, cookies or so on. It's quite difficult for children in this part of the world. So entrepreneurship is something very, very unknown, I should say, very, very rare, except for the children that is born in entrepreneurship platform. Mm-hmm. I mean, entrepreneurship families. So Kidstarter is a holistic platform where kids can actually launch their first business. So it has a combination of four things. It has a learning program. It has a kids-only marketplace. It has a kids community of entrepreneurs. And fourth, a kids-only event place where whatever business they're doing, they actually can go up and present and do shows to present their businesses. So it's a very holistic entrepreneurship platform for the kids. And it's something the world hasn't seen. I mean, you have learning academies, you have online stores, you have kids communities, and you have some kids events, but not all integrated into one. And this is where we felt it's the best time of the era where everybody has gone online, and during this pandemic we saw there's a drastic increase of online users, and we felt that this is the time for us to launch something like this, and we've been very grateful for the feedback that we received so far from the market.
Now, this is aimed at kids from ages 5 to 17. Why do you feel like teaching business, teaching entrepreneurship is so important for kids, even as young as that?
Well, the first thing, when we talk about entrepreneurship, the first thing that comes to our mind all the time is about money. The way we see entrepreneurship, it's a mindset, and it's a set of skills that is needed for a human being to become a better human. It's to be a better father, better son, better resident, better citizen, and so on. And it's a combination of multiple skills, like skills of curiosity, persistence, problem solving, growth mindset, teamwork, public speaking, pitching, persuasion. There's so many skills that's involved in it. So we felt it's important that children learn that skills from a very young age. And 5 years is an age where we've seen a lot of success stories from the West, where kids are selling lemonades, selling cookies, doing a lot of these young entrepreneurs. I mean, there's a kid, if you can see, Moz Boz, or there's Joy. There's so many kids that you've seen in the West that are as little as 5 years old, 6 years old. They've built their business and they've donated like tens of thousands of dollars to the charity and so on. So we said that's the right age, and it's not necessarily the majority of people are going to be from that, but we feel it's the right age for kids to try it, and that should not be undermined. And children from the age of five should be given the opportunity to learn entrepreneurship.
Are they having fun, though? It sounds like raising a band of tiny adults. And I hate the thought of children kind of losing their childhood trying to be successful. Is there a sense of fun in this for them?
Okay, now that's the best part, right? So we have gamified the whole thing. So it's all about fun experience. It's the whole experience starts from finding your passion. It's not about, you know, I got to sell something and do something. No, it's about there's things around you. And you're always, as a child, trying to solve something. So it could be a toy that is your friends always look for. It could be a candy that your friends always buy. And you love that candy too. And you're buying it and you're doing it just to make that extra piece of money. Or it could be a child that, you know, he or she sees poor people on the street or wants to feed children across the globe. How can we do that the child must be thinking, how can I do that myself? And this becomes a platform for them to become able to do that by themselves. So it's about creating that confidence for the future. So it's not about taking the childhood. It's about making the best out of the childhood.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Teaching our kids how to be entrepreneurs. There is a new program called Kidstarter, and we're speaking to the co-founder now, Jazeer Jamal, serial entrepreneur, family man, investor, startup advisor, and we've been talking about some of the success stories we've heard around the world. And interestingly, have you ever heard of the Kangaroo Cup? For as long as she can remember, Lily Bourne is 12 and she's been designing and making things. And this was in response to a bit of a need in her family.
All started when I realized that my grandpa was shaking a lot because he had Parkinson's, and that meant a lot of spilling at every meal, and that meant a lot of bending and cleaning up for grandma, and that wasn't good. So I decided to make the noticeable cup. All it was just a little reusable cup, one of my grandma's, and some homemade luck. And then I started getting into pottery. And so I thought I could make a porcelain noticeable cup because my dad was spilling his coffee all over the keyboard and wasn't happy. When it was all finished, I gave it to him. And he was much happier.
I can remember as a little kid, I'd bring all these crazy inventions to my folks and they'd laugh and say, in a different world, we could probably sell a million of them. And I held that cup that Lily made for me in my hand and I realized we live in that world that they were talking about. So I asked Lily if she wanted to try and bring it into production.
So Lily there and her dad talking about the Kangaroo Cup, an invention born out of necessity, helping her grandfather, who has Parkinson's, to not spill his drinks. And it's now gone on to be hugely successful. 11,000 of the plastic ones have been pre-ordered and they started their Kickstarter campaign just a few years ago. So kids and entrepreneurship, some of the big ideas. Jazeer, what are some of the great ideas you've heard out of that kind of up-and-coming generation? Lily, they're solving a problem. Are some fun? Are some more out there to kind of change the world?
Well, all the three can come along. I mean, you can always find a problem that can change the world, and you can also change the world by having loads of fun with it, right? So it's not like one individually. Mm. And this is what we're going to teach at Kidstarter, that, you know, how can you have fun and at the same time you solve a problem, and at the same time how you can solve the world, you know, solve the problems of the world. I mean, and this is what the video series that we're going to be having in the learning program that the kids will learn. So if you know that every sale that they make on the platform, 10% actually goes to the Share the Meal project, where a hungry child is being fed. And then and automatically we're teaching the children, how do you change the world with what you do? And second is that, how do you have fun with the business that you do by, you know, tagging along with your best friend or your friends or your neighbors or your siblings? And there's a lot of fun activities that's around it, whether it's making posters, going to pitching to your neighbors and so on. So every part of those element is being covered when it comes to the Kidstarter program. So my answer would be, yes, you could have loads of fun. You could solve a problem and you can also change the world.
Can I ask you, and you made a really interesting point earlier, which was about how you are a natural born entrepreneur yourself, as I said, from, you know, an early age selling and being excited about entrepreneurship, and your son is following in your footsteps. What if you don't come from an entrepreneurial family? You know, what kind of things can parents do to perhaps put aside their own fears and concerns about starting something, because it's something they've never done themselves?
Well, I think the most important thing when it comes to entrepreneurship is about having that eye to look for opportunities, and that not necessarily you have to become an entrepreneur. You don't have to be having an entrepreneurship background. I mean, I've seen a lot of these great opportunities coming out of, from these young kids or even young millennials today, because I've been involved in loads of startups. And as a matter of fact, majority of them don't come from entrepreneurship background, but they have something in common. And one is the eye for seeing problems, and second, being proactive. Third, empathy. Or fourth, you know, the adaptability to changes and making that into themselves about how I can solve the problem. So I think it's all about you could be born with it, and some are something that you naturally have it in you without having any sort of coming from the family, your parents or your background. Like myself, I was never, you know, aspiring myself to become an entrepreneur at all. I mean, when I was little, I wanted to be a pilot. I wanted to fly planes, and I was good at science. I was good at but in the end, I became an entrepreneur. And it's all about, because I felt that I was good at solving problems than just flying planes.
Tell us that about your son. How old is he, and where is he in the world of business right now? He's got some great ideas, it sounds like.
Well, you know, the thing that I have done so far is that I always involve the family to solve the problem. So as a matter of fact, even the kids that he's into the project early on, and he's contributing on a regular basis, whether it's coming to videos, whether it's courses, the selling strategies or anything, he's involved from the day one. So he's been, you know, a core part of the project. And apart from that, he's got his own little things that's going in the side. And he started this concept called Fruit Bros, where he was selling organic and fresh fruits in the neighborhood and at a lower cost, not at the rip-off price as that's in the organic stores. And he and his brother started as a passion, and they would do it sometimes a couple times a week, sometimes whenever they feel like. So they're doing that on the side. And also he's got a couple other coming up. Again, it's kids need encouragement also. It's not just that they come, but the parents also should play a big role in supporting them to make that happen, because that's also very, very important when it comes to nurturing those skills in the kids.
We've had a number of messages saying how to get involved. Are you able to explain a little bit about how the video course works, the online marketplace, and how people can sign up, get their kids doing something creative and exciting over the summer?
It's very simple. As we just launched we just did a pre-launch, and now and we've got, all you have to do is log on to www.kidstarter.io, and you can sign up. And the best part is that each sign up is up to three kids, whether it's your siblings, whether it's your two friends, and you sign up. And it's right now, it's on sale. We have 50% off. It's at $149.
Well, really excited to hear some of the ideas that are going to be coming out from the next generation. So keep in touch, and tell those kids to remember us, won't they, when they're the next Jeff Bezos. Thank you so, so much. I really, really appreciate it. So it's kidstarter.io. And if you want that, just send me a message on 4001 and I will reply with the website.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Children, sadly, do not come with a manual, leaving us parents often struggling about how to raise mentally strong, well-rounded, successful, happy kids. Some parents are strict, Others are more lenient. Some are vigilant. Others are distant. And if the question, what type of parent do I want to be, has ever crossed your mind, it can help to understand the basics of different parenting styles. Hanan joining us from the Family Hub. She works with families to help them find their balance with courses and consultations. And joining us from her holidays. Hanan, thank you so much for your time. And I think a lot of parents, myself included, we're out of that rhythm and routine of, you know, school or nursery. Mine are asking for snacks constantly. And I think my parenting style can probably best be summarized as empty threats and bribery, which apparently isn't one of the four main parenting styles that we're talking about this afternoon. Can you talk us through the four that have been identified?
Of course. Thank you, Helen, for having me as always. I love being on the show. Well, there are four main types, and it ranges from permissive, where, you know, we let our kids do whatever the way we want. There are no boundaries, no limitations on anything, up until like authoritarian, where we are, you know, dictating everything. And we're just making sure that the kids are just following rules, very strict. They have no voice, more or less. And psychologists have gone back and forth over this, and the balanced approach, just like you said, is exactly what we're looking for. And this can be seen in what we call the authoritative style, where there are clear boundaries and limitations, but also kids have a voice and they get to say, you know, they get to have the power of choice. They get to choose between different things. They get to make mistakes and learn from them, and so on and so forth. And there's like the fourth style, which we really try to avoid, which is called the neglectful style, where we, the parents just, you know, let the kids, they give them no attention whatsoever. The kids do whatever they want without, you know, any sort of care or responsibility taken. So these are the four styles that we have.
And do people really, you know, sort neatly into one of these four categories? You know, surely I think about me as a parent, and some days I'm stricter, sometimes I'm tired, I'm perhaps a bit more permissive. You know, as parents, do we combine more than one style or fail to fit into this scheme altogether?
Yes, 100%. I mean, it's very hard to have just one style. I mean, each one of us, you know, we fall closer to one of them for sure. But I mean, it depends. Like, for example, on summer holidays, we're all a little bit more permissive than we normally are when, you know, with bedtime, sometimes with screens, with, you know, food and all that. We get to be a little bit more permissive. We're on holidays, we relax a little bit and so on. And then we're more like authoritative and authoritarian when we're coming towards, you know, homework and when we're back into the school routine and so on. So we get to go back and forth a lot of times as well. I always tell parents, what are your priorities? So some parents would have, you know, bedtime, that's like very strict. So like the kids would have no leeway during the time. And other parents think that, you know, bedtime is very relaxed. Why not, you know, have it like a little bit more relaxed and so on? So they would be a bit more permissive there and so on and so forth. So we do get to move back and forth. And you know, the bad cop, good cop analogy where, yeah, you know, sometimes one parent would do one thing and then we would go back and forth. The kids are smart and they start to pick up on, you know, when do they ask you what question? And they know what to do.
They know who to ask.
So we get to move from one area to another.
And then can I ask you, when it comes to parenting styles or even attitudes towards parenting, what role does age or generation or even culture play, do you think, when it comes to the way we conduct ourselves with our kids?
I was reading an article a few days ago, Helen, about this. And one of the psychologists said that we eventually turn into our parents unless we're careful, and culture plays a very big role on this. So I would sometimes catch myself saying and doing things that my parents would say. So for example, my son wants to go out and he's 13 and he wants to go out and play football somewhere, right? And I say, you have to be home by 9. And he's like, mommy, but it's, you know, it's holidays. And why can I come back at 10? And then I realized that, you know, my parents would always say, come back at this point in time, you know, when normally we could relax a little bit. So we tend to have these, you know, preconceived notions of what our kids should do and what our boundaries are. Mm-hmm. And that plays a very big role. Like culture plays a very big role in this. And unless we're aware and we're completely self-conscious of what we're doing, we will tend to be repeating without knowing what our parents are doing. And sometimes, Helen, you have the complete opposite, where if we had like some sort of dysfunctional relationship going on with growing up with any of our parents, we would actually stop doing like do the complete opposite of what our parents would do.
It's a conscious decision.
If our parents were permissive or neglectful, we would give the kids, you know, 100% attention. Or if we had like a working parent or a stay-at-home parent and we didn't have a great relationship with either of them, we would do the complete opposite. So it's very interesting to see how the dynamics fall apart. And unfortunately, there isn't like one full block that we all fall into. We just keep going from one point to the other.
Family Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Think about how you parent. Do you show lots of affection or remain aloof? Do you expect blind obedience or encourage children to ask questions? Do you enforce limits or let kids do as they please? Hanan's joining us from the Family Hub. She helps families find their balance and we're talking parenting styles. What is yours? Anonymous message here, Hanan, which I think is a really interesting one. It says, Anonymous, please, I don't mind my kids having TV or computer games if they've been outside or playing for most of the day, running around at campus school, or if we're inside playing games, doing homework. My husband has a different idea. He works hard, so he's tired. We'll give the kids TV, iPads all the time. I think he does it to keep them quiet and because it earns some easy brownie points. I feel like I put all the effort into making sure the kids have a fun and healthy lifestyle, and he puts in zero effort. It causes massive arguments in our house, full-blown shouting, and I don't know how to handle it. Any advice on working out a parenting style clash? I think, honestly, this 100% resonates with me. Not in this exact situation, but I'm probably more permissive. My husband's probably more authoritative. So how can you reconcile a clash when it comes to parenting styles?
I think that's everybody, Helen. I mean, we all have these issues with our partners. And I really think that we will clash, and that's completely okay as long as we do it behind closed doors without the kids being a part of it. If the kids know that, you know, mom says that, but then dad says something else and they do it in front of the kids, then the kids are so much more emotionally intelligent than we give them credit for. And they're going to be, you know, manipulating and playing on all sides and, you know, playing mom and dad against each other all the time. So, I mean, there isn't a right way to do it. Sometimes having too much screen time or too little screen time is up to the discretion of the family, as long as there are, you know, healthy borders and boundaries and so on. But I think it's really important that here mom and dad need to have that fight alone and then create some sort of leeway for each other, compromise on what they both think. Because if both of them have completely different ideas, it's not fair that either one of them gets to win
every time.
And I think it's so important. It doesn't work. Resentment will come out. You know, they're going to have this sort of, oh, who's the fun parent? Who's the parent that the kids will always run to? And that's, I don't think that's fair. And it gives like a false sense of security for the kids of what family is. And they tend to grow up and repeat these behaviors again, to have that sort of insecurity between their parents. So it's really important that we have these conversations and that we present this aligned front in front of the kids.
Yeah, and show no weaknesses. Because kids can be like Jurassic Park, testing the fence for weaknesses. And next thing you know, you're like, hang on, why are you still here? You're supposed to be in bed 3 hours ago. This is ridiculous. I'm going to squeeze in one last question. One last question. I think it's a really interesting one. Again, Anonymous saying, how about grandparents? My in-laws' permissive style undermines everything I do to raise kids who've got some self-control, tidy up after themselves. But we live with my in-laws. My mother-in-law in particular lets them get away with everything, indulges every whim. How can I assert myself without making trouble in the family? Oh, that's a very tricky one. But I know, obviously, we've got multi-generation families living together here. And grandparents love to spoil and, you know, indulge there, as this message is saying. How on earth can you navigate that one, Hanan? Please help.
Actually, I had these conversations before, and I think it's only fair that we allow the grandparents to indulge, but allow them to indulge with the kids on some areas. So, for example, if it's about screen time and the parents think that the kids have to have like limited screen time and so on, then this is a conversation that they have to have with the in-laws. But they also need to give the in-laws a little bit of leeway. So, for example, if the in-laws want to give them like an extra sweet here and there, an extra brownie, want to take them out, you know, for a little bit extra time, then that could be okay. It depends on the family, of course, and what they're allowing and what they won't. But it's very tricky living with in-laws, and they need to enjoy their grandparents. And to them, the way that they enjoy their grandparents is to give them a little bit of a spoiling attitude, which is, at the end of the day, in the bigger picture, it's fine. But it's not fair that the in-laws would break all the rules and all the boundaries. And that's why it's important to have that conversation and agree, okay, this is when you're going to spoil them, this is when you're not. And please, 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 mothers-in-laws, fathers-in-laws, if you're hearing us, please do not break whatever rules that the parents have in front of the kids.
Well,
do it when,
said.
You know, have that conversation all the time, just to be fair to everybody.
And a message here on 4001 saying, my wife has always applied the simple rule of treat others as you would like to be treated. It's developed a strong sense of respect in our children and has removed a lot of the complexities being discussed. So if they abuse our boundaries, we play this back. I think that's a brilliant life lesson for everyone, parents or otherwise. Hanan, thank you so much for your insights this afternoon. As I said, you are travelling, but you are always in contact. And on Instagram, it is the Family Hub _ Hanan. Wishing you a wonderful summer with the family, and I hope you can provide a united front. It's certainly going to be my aim with my husband over the summer. Have a good one. And thank you to all of you for your messages as well. Really fascinating topic, and one we will absolutely be returning to.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You can tune in to Afternoons with me, Helen Farmer, live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Sunday to Thursday between 2 and 5. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to this podcast. It helps other people find us, boost us in the ratings, and you'll get it direct to your phone.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.